Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast. Today my guest is Brad Noon, who served with me in the Connecticut Army National Guard for a while. He deployed to Afghanistan in 2006, and since getting out of the military, he's found an outlet that allows him to sort of get in touch with nature, which I wanted to talk to him about. I think that's a path that not enough vets take, and it certainly has seemed to work wonders with Brad. So Noon, buddy, I don't want to give away too much about what you have going on here, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of just introduce yourself?
Hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. My name's Brad Noon. I, like Scott said, we served together in the Connecticut Army National Guard. I'd done 2 years active duty with the Guard and then 6 years on drilling status. We did a deployment to Afghanistan in 2006. I struggled a lot when I came home, and I became fully involved in the outdoors, which I assume we'll probably delve into that here in just a second.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if you don't mind, touching on some of the things, some of the struggles that maybe you went through, and I don't know all the details necessarily, but, you know, during your time in the military or even after getting out, what were some of those things that were, difficult for you? I know you said when you got back home from Afghanistan, you had a tough time there, but, you know, what were some of those things, if you don't mind sharing some of that?
Sure, absolutely. When I was in Afghanistan, I experienced a number of traumas, everything from having to take life of enemy combatants to seeing charred and mutilated bodies to seeing and experiencing what we call combat stress or anxiety. I lost sleep. I would go days without sleep. And this was in a combat zone. This was in Afghanistan. I came home and I didn't have a coping mechanism, so I drank. I drank and I partied, and that's what I did. I ended up living in my car. Readjustment back into civilian life, even after I got my drinking under control, is still one of the biggest hurdles that I have to overcome on a day-to-day basis. The way the military trains you is not to... It doesn't operate... You don't operate very well in a civilian life with a military mentality. Is what I've come to experience. I have experienced homelessness on and off, some involuntary, some voluntary, for the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. I've kind of been in and out of my truck. And it's been a great experience, but it's been very, very hard at the same time.
Sure. So let's talk about some of the, let's just call it the healthier coping mechanisms that you've kind of worked your way through and kind of discovered some of the outdoor adventures and kind of how that has helped you. What are some of the things that you do to get outside and how is that beneficial to you, or how have you found that to be beneficial to your kind of coping?
Sure. The outdoors, I tell people all the time, it acts as my church. It acts as my therapist. It acts as my doctor and my gym. It serves as all of those things. It serves as a place, to be completely quiet. And I can just be alone with my thoughts, which scares a lot of folks. And it definitely scares me, you know, as a vet, who's experienced actual combat. A lot of that stuff comes right on back when you get into a quiet place, but that's why it's so important to go out there, is that we have to address these things. But the outdoors, it gave me a really, really healthy coping mechanism. Instead of drinking, I went for a hike. Instead of staying out all night, smoking cigarettes and you know, smoking weed or whatever folks choose to use, or do to cope. I took that and replaced it. It wasn't easy. It took months and years to do, as I built up a skill set in the outdoors. And then I began, once my skill set was established a bit more, I began volunteering, and putting myself out there, to other vets, to other veterans, outdoor organizations that just by osmosis, by being around those environments and those people, you pick up more and more skills. You expand your networks of people and a support structure, while still having that true outdoor experience, you know, the fun that goes with it. And that's what a lot of people forget. The outdoors and these things are supposed to be fun. We're supposed to be out there, right, and playing in the mud and climbing on the rocks and rafting the rivers. And yeah.
Yeah. And you think back to, you know, like, you know, little kids playing outside, you know, they're playing in a sandbox, they're playing in the mud, they're getting dirty, and they're, every one of them has a smile on their face, right? They're having fun. Like right. You said, like it's supposed to be fun getting outside and, you know, even though you get a little dirty, like it's not a bad thing. And although
no, there
you know,
should be a little bit of pride, you know,
necessarily. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, when you're doing the grunt training though, it's not always smiles on your face because, you know, yes, you're getting dirty and yes, you're outdoors, but you're also humping a pack that's, you know, half your body weight or whatever, and it sucks. And, but at the same time, you're outdoors, you're getting that fresh air, using the physical energy, and, you know, it mentally, I know for myself anyways, days that I exercise, I'm an early riser, and I don't know if that was a thing that I took away from the military or whatever, but I always just wake up early. I exercise first thing in the morning, you know, right after getting up, and the days that I exercise, I feel great. You know, for the whole rest of the day, I feel awake, alert, you know, clear-headed, everything like that. The days that I don't exercise, I'm sluggish. You know, I just don't feel on top of my game on those days. And it's actually pretty amazing thing that I've found, that, you know, just getting outside and going for a run or something like that, getting that fresh air and get a little bit of physical energy. Some people might think, oh, I'm going to run, I'm going to be so tired later on in the day or whatever. But like, I'm like 10 times more awake after doing something like that, after exerting some physical energy, has been totally helpful for me, anyways. But I'm sure, you know, with some of the stuff that you've been doing, it, you know, it's probably something similar as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I volunteer for a number of organizations now, and most of them, they have physical activity as kind of their primary, the primary core value. You know, that on top of things that we bring back from the military, like honesty and integrity, and you know, in the Army, it was the seven core values.
Right.
But they are applicable. You know, a lot of people make fun of them, especially the stupid little dog tag that they give you that has all the seven Army Corps values, and they want you to wear it and things like that. And everybody makes fun of you when you're in. But then when you get out and you start to grow up a little bit more, you go through those hardships of reintegration, you see that those core values that actually are applicable.
Oh, absolutely. And even when you compare, you know, take any company that has, you know, a veteran and a civilian, who has never served, doing the same job side by side, that veteran who's kind of living those core values still, you know, because it's just been ingrained in them, you know, they're going to stand out far more, even if, you know, their backgrounds, they went to the same, you know, school and they got the same training and background and everything like that, but the veteran has the military experience on top of it, they're going to just stand out that much more because they have the integrity and all the other you know, kind of core values, and that's just going to make them stand out a bit more. You know, so yeah, you know, you're right, you know, we do kind of, you know, mock it and make fun of it and stuff, but you know, in real life and real application and everything like that, it's a very useful thing to kind of take away. It, you know, if you take away nothing else from the military, like that's not a bad thing to take away.
Sure, absolutely. And those things, like you said, are ingrained in us. And that ingraining of different doctrines or mentalities is both part of the solution, part of why veterans excel, but it's also why veterans struggle too. At least from my experience, I've also found that you can take the seven core Army values and you can apply them almost directly to the outdoors. Integrity. You have to let people know where you're going, what you're doing. You know, if you're leading a trip, they have to, folks have to know what's going on. You have to be informed and honest. You can't lie to them, tell them that it's easy. And then they come up and you have 7,000 feet to climb vertically. They're not going to be happy with you. You know, same with personal courage when you're out on a river, you know, and your adrenaline is going and you're scared. It takes personal courage to push through that and continue to paddle and continue to get down the river safely. And all that safety, does rely on that safety of yourself and others relies on these core values.
Yeah, especially in a kind of teamwork environment like rafting might be, where you're not the only one who's, you know, kind of steering the ship, if you will. You kind of have to rely on other people. And if you're going to cower away from the challenge or whatever, like they're kind of relying on you to do that. And that's sort of part of the deal. Like you all have to kind of work together in that aspect, I would imagine. But you know, something that you were talking about before, in terms of you know, how people stand out, you know, I and also how vets have trouble, you know, kind of reintegrating back into the civilian world. I find you know, through the people that I've talked to, you know, through this podcast and even other places, that a lot of times veterans, like just trying to find a job or working in the civilian world, they struggle a lot of times with the lack of communication, the lack of direction,
and the lack of structure.
Yeah, the structure is the one that I was looking for. The lack of structure that there is, and a lot of times the civilian employers or managers or whatever, they don't realize that that's the thing that's missing from this, and they may not even know how to structure their organization or their you know, whatever the job is. They may not even know how to structure it so that veterans can succeed. But that's something I think is super important for the employers, for the you know, middle management or, you know, whatever levels that you're talking about.
The decision maker,
for them to kind of recognize. Yeah, exactly. To recognize that's one of those things that the veterans kind of need to excel. And without that, they sometimes just feel lost. And it sort of sometimes might feel like they're getting hired just to kind of follow orders and be like a yes man or yes woman or whatever. You know, because that's what we're trained to do. We're trained to follow orders. And that's obviously not the only thing we're capable of doing.
Right.
You
know, but trained to take the initiative and to lead by example, you know, and to set that bar high instead of just meeting the standard.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly. Have you said you work with other veteran organizations, and what are some of those organizations? First off, like let's talk about what some of those are, and what are some of the things that you guys do to get outside? You know, some of the activities that you do and other things like that. Let's talk about that a little bit and let people know you know, kind of how to find you and all that kind of stuff too, so that, you know, should they be interested in getting outdoors and learning more about that, we can you know, point them in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely. So I have volunteered for 4, 5, 6 different organizations over the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. I'll kind of start with the beginning and we'll go chronologically. At the end of each one, I'll let you know which organizations I'm still with and which ones I'm not.
Sure.
I initially started with Wounded Warrior Project as a participant. They had reached out to me. They had some shooting events and things like that. And they reached out to me, said, "Hey, do you want to go ice climbing in New Hampshire?" I go, that's kind of a long way away, and I've never ice climbed before. They go, it's open to everybody. I go, okay, why not? Yes, I'll go give it a try. And I had hesitations, you know, it's a bunch of new people and in a place I've never been, doing things I've never done. And it wasn't just a veterans organization or a veterans trip. There was about three different organizations there. And I have worked with all three since. First one that was there and the one that I was dedicated probably the longest to was Veterans Expeditions. They can be found at veteransexpeditions.com. They primarily build community amongst veterans using outdoor sports. I'm no longer with Veterans Expeditions as of last year. Okay. I took a step back to work on myself, but Veterans Expeditions is an outstanding organization. Their leadership there, specifically their board, is top notch. Their board and the field leaders are incredible. And I have nothing bad to say about any of them. They are a 501c3 nonprofit, and they are located in, are based out of Colorado, but run trips nationwide. And now are starting to run, or now they're starting to run trips internationally. I've been up a number of mountains in Colorado. My very first paddling experience on Whitewater was with Veterans Expeditions. The big pointer for Veterans Expeditions is that community. And the outdoor training, folks can come out and you learn, we run everything from basic snowshoeing and rock climbing and hiking trips to, you know, summits of the world's highest peaks. We've sent multiple teams up, Denali. So the tallest peak in North America.
Okay.
We've had two teams from Veterans Expeditions go up and summit, which is absolutely incredible to think of where some of these folks were 5, 6, 8, 7 years ago, even a year ago, to where they're summiting, you know, a 20,000 foot mountain is unbelievable. And I've nothing but pride for my time served within Veterans Expeditions and the people that I've met there.
Yeah. And I found too, that you talked about the community building that they do through that. And I found that one of the things that a lot of other veterans that I talk to find lacking is that, that sense of camaraderie and that community or family kind of feeling that you might get with the guys that you deployed with or the people that you deploy with, or the people who are in your, unit. They get out into the civilian world and they kind of lose that. And especially if they're not really close or they don't really have their own family of their own, you know, traditional family, they sort of lose that. And so something like Veterans Expeditions, you know, where they build that community through those sports and everything, I think that's a great mission to have.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And they stay non-political. Anybody who wants to come out and is qualified or in general, okay, physical health, and that doesn't exclude anybody with disabilities. That does not exclude folks who have missing arms or hands or folks who are paraplegic or quadriplegic. I've been up ice climbing with a paraplegic. He was paralyzed from the waist down and he had special gear and all sorts of stuff and he was fine. The executive director of Veterans Expeditions is missing half of his hand. He's out there. He's an avid mountain biker. He's he's an incredible outdoorsman. So we're all about bringing everyone out, as long as they're there to actually build a community and there to help each other and to learn new skills and are looking for self-improvement.
Sure.
A lot of what turns some folks off of outdoor veterans trips are what we call professional trip takers. And they're just out there for a free vacation. And we don't get them a lot across, and this is across all of the organizations I volunteered for in the outdoors. But they are out there. And it absolutely can take away from the trip and take away from the group dynamics.
Sure.
But it really isn't. If that is your biggest concern, you know, that you're going to be having to deal with somebody who's not there to improve themselves or improve others, then I think that's a pretty good a pretty good place to be if that's the worst that you're dealing
right.
with. Because
if that's the worst thing you got, yeah,
exactly. If there's 15 people on the trip and one of them maybe isn't there for the best reasons, you just continue on, you know, you take all the good out of it.
Sure.
But then after Veterans Expeditions, or around the same time that I got involved with them, I was involved with Sierra Clubs, military outdoors. And a lot of people, if you're involved in the outdoor community or involved in politics, you hear the word Sierra Club and you think, oh no, crazy hippies, left wing, you know, protest the government and chain yourself to trees, things like that. And that's absolutely what the Sierra Club does or has done in the past. But the military outdoors program is different. Yes, it does attract folks, and the trips that we lead there are based around conservation and protecting lands. But it's also reconnecting veterans back to our lands, back to the outdoors. I had typically run, or for I think 3 or 4 years, I had run a Navajo Sweat Lodge trip in conjunction with Friends of Cedar Mesa. They're a conservation organization down in Southeast Utah, in conjunction with the Navajo Nation in Southern Utah, as well as Sierra Club and other partnering organizations like the BLM. The model for that trip, I think, is really, really unique and very important. We would start off by doing a service day. So everybody would come out, we'd camp out. The next morning we would wake up and we would go out and we'd volunteer with Friends of Cedar Mesa doing conservation volunteer work, whatever they needed. Most of the time it was surveying archaeological sites or transporting fence building material out to these sites or things along those lines, cataloging archaeological mm-hmm. sites, you name it. But we would volunteer with them, and Friends of Cedar Mesa has really championed a lot of the conservation efforts in Southern Utah, specifically around Bears Ears and the recent National Monument there. But after the day of service, we would head out to the Navajo Nation. Per capita, the Diné or Navajo people have the highest percentage of veterans in their population of any other demographic. You always hear Navajo.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Navajo code talkers in World War II and Vietnam. Mm-hmm. You hear of now they pay back. They pay it back. They pay it forward to the rest of the veteran community outside of just the Navajo world. And it's a very rare thing to be able to experience a Navajo sweat lodge. And they do what's called a warrior welcome home ceremony. And it's, I won't go too far into it. I suggest you check out that trip on Sierra Club Military Outdoors website. And they're just Sierra Club /Military Outdoors. And you can find them. The primary contact there is Rob Vessels. He's a 10th Mountain veteran. Both Veterans Expeditions and the Sierra Club Military Outdoors are vet-run and vet-led, 100%. Sierra Club, yes, has a lot of civilian folks working for them, but all mm-hmm. of the leadership on the military outdoor side and the Veterans Expedition side, the outdoor leadership, are veterans. Which is huge because veterans understand veterans. We know what it was like being in the military, even if we serve different branches or jobs. But I'm sorry, I digress. I keep getting sidetracked here. Back to the sweat lodge trip. After we complete that, the welcome warrior welcome home ceremony and are welcomed into the home and onto Navajo Reservation in Monument Valley, we then go do a single night or 2 days or 3 days out in the backcountry. We do a backpacking trip. It's non-technical canyoneering. It's like steep hiking. And we go out and we experience some of these archaeological sites. We go out and we experience these canyons and these lands that are protected, the lands that we literally fought for. And that's the big point that I try to make to folks is that we fought for something in the military. What was it? You know, a lot of folks say, you know, I serve for school, or I serve for this, I serve for patriotism, I serve for whatever. But when you come back here, what's the tangible thing that you fought for? Was it your family? Was it your house? I know for me and a lot of the other veterans I've met in this outdoor and conservation community, we fought for the lands themselves. You know, I personally didn't fight for my government. I'm not stoked on the state of society and how people are treating each other right now. But one thing I will always love are our lands. And without them, my coping mechanism goes away, which is tough. And that's one of the reasons why I do care so much. And I have become so involved in conservation. Moving forward from there, I got involved with a small nonprofit that used to be based out of Connecticut. We now have national, or we have state chapters across the country, not every state, but we're constantly growing. It's Operation Vet Fit. And that's the organization where their true mantra is physical activity. As you mentioned before, Scott, you go out and you run and folks think that they're going to be tired afterwards. And yeah, you may feel a little fatigue in your legs, but your energy level's through the roof. You know, they call it the runner's high, right? And that carries on throughout the day. At least I know it does for me.
It does.
But that organization started as a nonprofit offering free gym membership and training to veterans. It's again owned by a veteran and his family. He's a Marine Corps Somali era veteran, mid 90s, and he absolutely kills it. His name is Dan Gaeta, and you can find Operation Vet Fit at operationvetfit.org. We do all sorts of stuff now, golfing tournaments, we do rafting. Weekends up in Massachusetts. My position there is our outdoor program coordinator and liaison, and our Colorado state rep. If you have questions, please reach out to me on that organization or Dan Gaeta. And you can find all of a phone number, email, address, things like that on the website. And the last organization that I've really been seriously involved in is Operation Vet Fit, Vet Voice Foundation. And they're more of a conservation organization. They bill themselves as a nonpartisan conservation organization looking to protect lands and historical sites around the country. And what Vet Voice Foundation does is they find veterans that do care about these places or have a connection to specific places, and they elevate their voice. Me personally, I was brought on by a good friend of mine, Garrett Reppenhagen. He used to be the Western States Director for Vet Voice Foundation. And he and I made the connection to my service and with the 10th Mountain Division in Afghanistan. And Camp Hale. If you don't know about Camp Hale, Camp Hale is where the 10th Mountain Division started. It's just outside of Leadville, Colorado. There used to be 14,000 people stationed in this tiny little valley. And that's where you hear about the ski mountaineers, you know, our skiing troops and our winter mountaineering. And the U.S. Army still uses both summer and winter mountaineering schools. I know the Marine Corps has their own. The great connection between 10th Mountain or Camp Hale and the rest of, I should say a lot of the Western States ski industry is that most or a lot of these big resorts, places like Vail Resorts, Aspen, Steamboat Springs, were started by veterans from 10th Mountain Division, who came home after World War II and were looking for a coping mechanism. They fell in love with the training that they were doing, the hiking, the skiing, the climbing, and they went back out to the mountains when they came home. The Appalachian Trail was first hiked all the way through by a World War II veteran looking to walk off the war. There's a great book by Doug Peacock, called Walking It Off, or Walking Off the War. I highly suggest it. He's a special forces veteran in World War II and has incredible perspective on the outdoors and conservation and things along those lines.
Great. Yeah. So I'll link to all of these organizations in the notes for the show. Just, you know, with brief descriptions about, you know, what each of them, you know, is up to and things like that. And also to that book that you were just referring to as well.
Sure.
I think all of these organizations, and I'm sure there's others that are out there, but all of these organizations, I think are really great, really a great way for veterans to get outside and like you said, kind of walk off the war, you know, to get outside, clear your mind, get that physical energy out and boost that mental energy, get yourself into a better mental space. And when you make a habit out of these things, when it's not just a one and done type of thing,
right.
I think it totally can transform your mental state of mind and really help things out. Now, obviously, I was saying before we started recording, you know, I'm not a licensed therapist or counselor or anything like that, so I can't say for sure. You know, yes, if you go outside and do X amount of exercise every day, or you know, hike this sure. far, you know, anything like that, it's automatically gonna fix you or whatever the issues are that you're going through. I can't say that.
I don't think any of us can. And I'll say as well, I'm not a licensed therapist. Anything. I'm a volunteer. I'm a veteran. And I care.
Sure. And I think that's where a lot of us come from. And the way I see it is it's not going to hurt you to try, you know, right. And maybe this is a thing that kind of gets you out there and you're like, wow, you know what, after a little bit, this at first I thought I was going to suck because I haven't gotten off the couch for, you know, years and years but it's actually not so bad. So, you know, and it's actually making me feel good, and I'm enjoying that fresh air and enjoying getting outside and everything, sure. Getting a little bit of sunshine on my face and everything. So, so this is great stuff, great information, and I'll link to all of this in the notes for the show.
Absolutely, and you can feel free to please link my personal contact information there. Anybody who feels like they could use some of these organizations or wants to learn more about them can reach out my end as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure all of these organizations have, you know, ways to get in touch on their websites as well, absolutely. Too. So your inbox isn't getting bombarded with all that stuff either. go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I said at the end, I would say which organizations I'm with and which I'm not. I'm no longer with Sierra Club Military Outdoors or Veterans Expeditions. I am still with Operation VetFit. And I am still volunteering with Vet Voice Foundation.
Cool. Okay. So that's good. That's good to know that, you know, if they reach out about those other two, it's not necessarily you that's going to be the person that they're interacting with.
But correct.
They potentially could be interacting with the last two, Operation Vet Fit and Vet Voice Foundation, which is good. Good to know. Now, kind of. What advice would you give to a veteran who might be struggling with some issues, maybe similar, combat related issues to maybe what you were going through? Maybe it's PTSD or whatever you might want to call it. Maybe they don't realize how powerful it can be to get outside. What would you say to them as far as like first steps? Like what would you say like would be the thing for them to do to, like I said, get off their couch and get outside. What would that first step look like to somebody?
Sure. There you can tackle it a number of different ways. I'll just kind of run down how I discovered it. It was, I had been looking for something. I'd looking for something other than alcohol, other than partying, other than the bar scene, other than karaoke, to go out every day, you know, to a place to put this energy, and this mentality, or in these thoughts. I needed a way to process them. so I just started, I reached out to random veterans organizations back, this was 2007, I think, or 2008. Wounded Warrior Project was the biggest one out there. And I, like I said, I had started being, heading out with them. It wasn't too much outdoor stuff. I knew I enjoyed shooting. So they had a trap shooting event, trap and skeet shooting event that I went to, and that was incredible. And I had a blast. But it was just kind of a one and done. It didn't have that community. You know, they were a very, very big organization. It took in a lot of money, and had a lot of civilians and a lot of veterans, and it just seemed kind of all over the place. It just seemed like people would pop out of the blue and say, "Hey, you want to go on this? Okay. When can I expect the next one? We don't know. We'll reach out." So I was like, okay, what else can we do? So I just started going hiking on my own. I looked for what were the tallest peaks in the states surrounding me. And I started to see if I could go climb them. And I went out for, it started off really, really easy. Like, I went up for like a half mile hike and I was tired. I was exhausted after that, you know, because I wasn't in shape. I had an ankle injury and I had a brain injury and I was sitting on the couch. And something that I've discovered, and that a lot of folks have shared this sentiment with me, both in the veteran outdoor community and in the civilian outdoor community, are a body at rest tends to stay at rest. And a body in motion tends to stay in motion. You know, we think of Newton's laws you know, the picture book, our textbooks, where a rock is rolling and it's not going to stop rolling unless something else stops it. But that same mantra applies to the human body. Both our mind and our emotions and our physical being, that if you just sit there and you don't work on it, it's going to stay down and low and depressed, and inactive. There's some really good political art or cartoons that are on the internet right now of folks sitting there with a remote in their hand and growing out of their butt into the couch are roots like a tree. And it's just the opposite as well. If you're out there, even if it's a half mile a day, you know, even if it's, if you go for a 2 mile hike or 2 mile run twice a week, you know, something, just to get you moving. And like you had stated earlier, Scott, once that becomes habit, it's much, much, much easier. You feel way better. Your energy goes through the roof. Your mentality, you have a coping mechanism or a way to process it. The things that are going on in your head and your emotions. It's not a cure-all. It's not an end-all, be-all. The outdoors isn't. But I don't think anything is. I think that we need to, that the outdoors is just that. It's a coping mechanism. And a healthy one at that, because it does give you a skill set. Right. There are team sports like rafting. There are individual sports like free solo rock climbing or skiing. I don't suggest anybody go out into the outdoors on their own, at least to start. Always let somebody know where you're going, things like that. But go outside. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid that you're going to get eaten by a bear. Don't be afraid that you're going to get caught in a thunderstorm or a hailstorm. It actually brings up a really good experience of mine that I had. And it was my sophomore year, my second year, as a river guide, as a raft guide out here in Colorado. And it was going to rain. We said, screw it. We're going anyway. So we went up to this really, really fun class 4 run. That we call the Numbers on the Arkansas River, just outside of Buena Vista, Colorado. And right as we launch from the shore, the skies open up. Thunder, lightning, rain, sleet. It was like snowing and sleet. It was thunder. It was fire and brimstone kind of levels. Big, big thunderstorm, which aren't super common here out in the high desert mountains of Colorado. But it was one of the best experiences on the river I've ever had. We're hitting these huge waves and these huge holes in the river, you're just getting soaked, you know, freezing cold water, and there's lightning and thunder all around you. And it felt like I was in a movie. It was just so much fun. And it made me feel as cool and as badass as I did when I was doing the cool stuff in the military. And that's a part of the outdoors that a lot of other things can't give you. Is that adrenaline? Is that rush? Every single time I put on the river, I have a little bit of apprehension in my stomach, you know, a little knot. It's kind of like when, and this is more geared towards the combat folks or folks who are outside the wire. It's every time you get geared up and you're starting to roll outside that wire, you know, out into the combat zone. It's, hey, this is real. You know, there is inherent danger in this, but
yeah,
we know what we're doing, you know? And the outdoors is just like that. You go and you take courses and you learn from people who have been there and done it. And it's a standard progression, the crawl, walk, run progression. So start off slow and baby steps. And then before you know it, you know, give yourself a couple months, especially if you're really dedicated into it, and you'll be advancing quicker than you ever thought. And it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know what. Oh, go ahead.
No, I just said it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the sport or the discipline that you choose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was actually going to say something kind of along those lines, because I know when I first got into running, when I got out here, I hadn't really gotten off the couch for a few years after getting out of the military. It probably was 3-4 years or so. I didn't really exercise. I didn't work out. I didn't get outside very, very often, you know, outside of doing, you know, yard work and stuff like that. But I just didn't, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And the first day I decided to, you know, go out for a run, I went about a half mile and I felt like I was about to puke because I was just so out of shape and I was in like such bad shape or whatever. And I just walked back home, like the half mile. Like I went out a half mile and I just walked back the other half. And I was just like, this was so miserable. But I forced myself to just keep at it, because I knew I was in shape. Obviously I was in the military. I was in pretty decent shape back then. And I knew that I could get back to that spot, maybe not quite as great of shape, but I knew I could go for a run and not feel winded or not feel like I was going to puke or whatever, because, because I was out of shape. I knew I could get back to that. And so I just kept at it and kept going and going and going. And I actually worked out a schedule with my wife, because we have three young kids. And so I go running one day and she goes running the other day, and we just switch off every day, you know, every other day. And so three to four times a week, I go out to run, and it just feels great, you know, going out and getting that exercise now. And over time I'm able to build more miles. I've done half marathons and things like that now. And that's a long way from, you know, feeling like you're going to puke after a half mile to being able to do, you know, over 13 miles, in a half mile, marathon. So, you know, it's hard at first, but it gets very easier, kind of like what you're saying. And it doesn't matter really what you're doing, whether it's a walk around your neighborhood or going for a hike up in the mountains if you have them around you, or you know, going rafting or climbing or whatever it is.
Right.
Get outside, and that it's really going to help transform kind of that energy that you have.
Yeah, I fully agree. Going back to how I got into the outdoors, I did have a major ankle injury while I was in the military. And Scott, I'm sure you remember that time I was pretty well laid up even while I was in the National Guard. And then I got out, or I got my surgery on my ankle, and I got out, and they're like, hey, you might not walk again. They didn't say you might not walk again. They say you might not walk without a limp ever again. They said, you probably won't run. You're definitely not going to climb mountains and things like that. And I go, oh yeah. And a year later I ran a half marathon. I ran a half marathon, but I had the same experience. I went out and I was like, you know what? They tell me I'm not going to run again. I'm not going to do these things. I'm going to pick a goal. And I did. And I think that's really, really important as well. For any coping mechanism, specifically the outdoors. I think for me, it was easy with the outdoors, or running. You know, I signed up for a couple road races. I signed up for a 5K, and then I signed up for another 5K, and then I signed up for my half marathon. And that kept me committed because I was already paid. I had already committed to this, you know, and I had found a running partner. I'd found somebody that was willing to run with me, and help me out, mm-hmm. especially at the beginning when I was not doing too hot, coming back from an injury mm-hmm. and a bit of laziness and depression attached to, military service. But the outdoors is really, really easy to pick a goal. At least for me, it was. You know, you see all these incredible photos on the internet. They're your backgrounds for your phones, for your computers. You have pictures of them on your wall. Say it's the Grand Tetons, or it's the Great Smoky Mountains, or the Appalachian Trail, or it's the Matterhorn in Europe, or Denali, or Everest, or whatever. You can pick that. And okay, what are the skills that I need to get to that level? And then you're okay.
Right.
And then you break it down from there. But even there, growing up, I was a big hiker. You know, my father always took us on a small local section of the Appalachian Trail that ran through Connecticut, back in in Kent, Connecticut. And, so I was mm-hmm. like, well, hiking and backpacking was kind of my bread and butter. Let me start there. You know, I want to go climb some mountains, and I picked a mountain. Okay. I want to go climb this 14,000 foot peak. And it's actually in the same town that I live in right now, out here in Colorado, central Colorado. It's Mount Princeton. And that was my first 14,000 foot peak. And I did that using that same progression. I started off hiking small things. You know, I'll go up to a local waterfall, or I'd go up to a Connecticut peak that was a lot smaller. It was 1,000 foot gain instead of 5,000 feet gain. And it is. It's those baby mm-hmm. steps. But it's easy to get discouraged. It's really easy to get discouraged, especially when you're looking at that stupid mountain all damn day and it never gets any closer, you know. But then you're finally at the top right. and you're like, wow, that really wasn't too bad. Yeah, it was a long day, long, hard day of hiking and climbing and weather and things like that. But when you get up there, that's what it's all about. That hard work, that reward, and then you come down, you know, and you're just riding that high all the way back down to the trailhead.
There's that sense of accomplishment too, right?
Absolutely. There's a huge sense of accomplishment, and it's addicting. It's very addicting. Mm-hmm. You know, I accomplished this one. Okay. Let me pick one a little bit higher, or one that has a little bit rougher trail, or one that requires ropes to get up and around. And that's kind of your progression. Mm-hmm. You know, you build that confidence with each peak you go up, with each river you raft, with each new section, with each road race or each distance or time record you break of your own or somebody else's.
Right. Absolutely. Well, this has been great information. This all the stuff getting outside and all the physical activities and everything like that you're talking about. I think it's really great. And I think it's important information to get out to other vets who might be having trouble trying to figure out like what are they supposed to do? What's next and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted to thank you, for sharing your story and sharing, these other organizations and how vets can start getting outdoors. I did have one other question for you. And this question I like to ask, and I preface it with, it can be answered both either seriously or with a joke or, you know, combination of the two, but, whichever you prefer. But the question is there anything that you wish someone would have told you before you joined the military? And I we've already had someone say that the recruiters lie. So that's kind of, I think that's kind of common knowledge.
And recruiters lie, don't trust the government, you know? Yeah, it's hard. Things like that. Honestly, it's
taken. Military grade isn't really what all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, exactly. Military spec. the piece of advice that I wish somebody had given me was to find that thing that matters to you most in life and give your heart to it, you know, even if that is a military career. For me, it wasn't a military career. I did 8 years, you know, and two of them active and six guard. And it wasn't for me. It wasn't my passion. I was good at it, sure. Just like you were, Scott, you know, I don't know if it was your passion or not. I assume not. But I'm unsure. But it's to find that passion, to follow, really follow your heart. as cliche as it does sound, because that's after the military, you still have to live with yourself. And that's what, what really matters. Military is a small part or it can be a large part of people's lives, but it's not everything.
No, it's not. And there's definitely a much bigger picture to that. And if your only identity is the military, you know, that might not necessarily be, you know, the right thing for you. You know, it's, especially if that's not the thing that matters to you the most, you know, if there's, right. you know, if it's family or, you know, whatever, there's other things out there. So,
and it's easy to fall back on that mentality or to fall back on what the military trained you, you know, because it's what we know best, you know, there's a reason that the US excels militarily is because we're trained very, very, very well. Get outside of your comfort zone. I had to get outside of mine and I still live outside of it. And it's still a challenge every day to do that, but it's worth it. It's worth it 100% every day, every time.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you again for sharing your story. And like I will link to all of this stuff in the show notes and let people know where to find you, where to find you know, some of these organizations and how they can get outdoors get involved with these types of things. So thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Every single one of these organizations is always looking for motivated and honest and qualified volunteers. So please check them out. Check them out and get out with us.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.